Les colloques du Collège de France.
Thank you very much, Jean-Jacques, Professor Hublin, for the invitation and for the organization. So today I will talk about time again, but time of evolution, but on a very shallower time scale, which is the order of generation time. Okay, so it's a joint work. I will talk about joint work with Guillaume Achaz, the co-head of the group I lead here. In population genetics, Arnaud Lerouzic in quantitative genetics, and Laurent Loison, historian of science, who is in the audience. And so we have also, let's say, a little flash of time, which is the time of history of science. So the topic of the talk today is how plasticity can help adaptation. I will start with a very brief sketch of the complex process of adaptation to a novel environment, where here the figure that you will see is a figure that summarizes the adaptation of a pathogen to a new vaccine. Okay, for a pathogen, a new vaccine is a harsh environment, and of course we don't want it to adapt, but sometimes it does, and we wanted in this paper to study how and when it can adapt. So here on the A figure, you can see that the pathogen really goes extinct and cannot escape the vaccine. In B, it adapts itself. Actually, it's the environment is not too harsh for the pathogen, and it goes this way. So you can see also on C that a mutant arises. So here, the color code is that blue is the wild type pathogen, and orange is the mutant pathogen, the mutant that can escape the vaccine. And it goes until F, where here you see that this phenomenon is called evolutionary rescue, where you can see the arrival of a vaccine escape mutant, and this vaccine escape mutant like increases in frequency and outcompetes the wild type. Okay, so this phenomenon of evolutionary rescue is a very well studied today, because we hope that certain species will be able to adapt to a changing world by fixing new mutations, letting them adapt to their new natural conditions. And to, let's say, recapitulate this topic of time here, evolutionary rescue is a race between extinction that you can see on the panel A and fixation of an adaptive mutation that you can see on panel F. Okay, but from this picture is missing the important topic that I want to focus on today, which is plasticity. And actually, so there is a lot of history, as Laurent Loison has pointed to us, about whether evolution and adaptation in particular is plasticity first, whether the first stages of adaptation go with plasticity. What is plasticity? Plasticity is the ability to display a variable phenotype. So in a clonal population where individuals carry the same genotype, some individuals will carry different phenotypes. And adaptive plasticity is the idea that the phenotype responds to the environment with the same genotype, but with a phenotype which is little more adapted to the environment. And there is some literature on this topic. And here you see a sketch summarizing actually the results of this paper about side-blotched lizards that can accommodate their skin color to the habitat they dwell on. So here you can see the lizards that live on sand, and lizards that live on lava, on black lava flow, have a different color. That's plasticity. And on the right column, you can see that some of these lizards may fix a new mutation that fix the phenotype permanently in the population. And so if we want to summarize this in a model, we'd say that we have two genotypes in the population. Genotype A, which is the wild type, genotype B, which is the mutant. Genotype A develops in phenotype alpha and B in phenotype beta. And here we want to think as beta as the skin, the black skin color, which is more adapted to the new environment. And so there are two ways to acquire this new adaptive phenotype, which is either by mutation or by plasticity. And the question that we want to ask today is whether plasticity can play a causal role in the hard coding of the adaptive trait in permanent heritable variation. So of course this question has a kind of Lamarckian flavor of heredity of acquired characters, and indeed this question goes back to James Baldwin, who was a famous experimental psychologist at the time, when the dispute, the scientific dispute between Lamarckians and Darwinians was the most acute. So here's a picture of James Mark Baldwin. He himself said in another paper, talking about his own work, an hypothesis which mediates between the two rival theories of heredity, the Lamarckian theory of acquired characters and the Darwinian theory of adaptation from fortuitous mutations. So he says, he calls that phenomenon organic selection, and he was not the only one. Organic, actually, as Simpson said 50 years later, organic selection has nothing more organic than any other type of selection. So don't be afraid by this term. Just the idea that the process of ontogenetic adaptation, considered as keeping single organisms alive and so securing determinate lines of variation in subsequent generations. So the idea is the idea of really letting of plasticity, letting the population survive. Okay, and here's a second quote from the same article in the American Naturalist, saying that the coincident variation characters, indistinguishable from those which were due to acquired modification, these modifications, these accommodations, as they said, were the fostering nurses of congenital variations. Okay, so actually this launched a strong debate that actually is still ongoing today. And just to fix ideas, I think we can list up to five hypotheses on organic selection and the role of plasticity in evolution. The first is Baldwin's theory on the fact that plasticity helps the population cope with the novel environment and so delays extinction, thereby enabling the population to wait for an adaptive genetic variant to appear and take over. So the idea is really that plasticity sustains the population to a level where it can wait for the new mutant to arise. There was actually at the time also this idea that plasticity, or let's say other kinds of treatment, can complement the existing variation up to the threshold above which selection is active. The idea at the time was that, you know, the famous critique to Darwin that half a wing is not useful for a bird, and so that idea solved the problem of the first stages of adaptation by letting plasticity complement, let's say, augment the phenotype up to a level where selection can act. A version which can be seen as a higher dimensional version of the second hypothesis is the fact that plasticity allows the population to learn the phenotypic space and so speeds up adaptation by modifying the fitness landscape and the selection pressures. Here, I may acknowledge that this might seem a little cryptic stated as such. I can elaborate on that in the questions. The fourth and not least hypothesis was that actually plasticity does the contrary. It impedes adaptation by masking the selective advantage of adaptive variants. If the plastic phenotype can do the job, why would the adaptive variants take over? And actually their fitness advantage will be reduced by the presence of the plastic phenotype. That's a very important critique to the Baldwin effect, which was formulated by Gulick and also by Meyer one of the craftsmen of the modern synthesis of evolution, and had a lot of influence on the research on this topic in the 20th century. The fifth and also very interesting topic that I will not at all discuss here is this idea that, coming from Waddington and Schmalhausen in the Soviet Union, that genetic and plastic pathways coincide. And so adaptation sculpts this developmental pathway and then locks it into a fully determined phenotype. Maybe you have in mind these Waddington valleys, which represent how marble comes from the initial state of the development and rolls down some valley. And the idea was that there can be like several valleys that the marble can borrow. And the idea of Waddington was that the plastic pathways, these valleys, were genetically and plastically were the same. And so that the genetic, the adaptation would just, lock the phenotype into one of these valleys. Okay, so to untie all these verbal arguments from which you will observe that, except from the first one, the population is absent. We're only talking about the organism and its physiology. I think that a mathematical model, of course, is needed, featuring demography, at least, demography, plasticity, and selection. So that's what we did with our colleagues. And just before I go to the modeling part, I want to advertise this recent book by Laurent, who goes further into these five hypotheses and maybe more. Okay, so let's go with the quantitative approach. So what would a minimal eco-evolutionary model with individuals that are simulated in silico feature? So first, we have to have birth and death rates that depend on the phenotype, on the environment, if you want to model adaptation or maladaptation, and on population size. Okay, if you want to model the fact that the population may become extinct, you have to have birth and death rates that depend on the population size. Okay, it's called density dependence in population dynamics. We want to have at least, and that's, we will stick to it, two genotypes, A and B, as in the previous figure, two phenotypes, alpha and beta, and two environments, E0 and E1, with this idea that there are mutations from A to B, that alpha is adapted to environment E0, the blue environment, that beta is adapted to the orange environment, and that in environment E1, if you want to make things simple, there is a probability P, plasticity, a probability P of displaying beta despite carrying genotype A. Okay, so there are individuals A beta with a probability P, with a frequency P in the population of A genotypes. Okay, and here, so plasticity P ranges from 0, no plasticity, to 1, perfectly adaptive plasticity. So 0 is the case when the population will crash in environment E1, the population of A's. And 1 is when the Meyer effect that I just explained will appear, when the mutant individuals have no advantage compared to the plastic individuals. So a very classic picture of what happens when you have one wild type which is adapted and a mutant which is not adapted is called the mutation selection equilibrium. And so here we can make calculations. So there will be some math from now on, from like maybe 5-10 minutes. Okay. But you can try to listen. Yeah. So in environment E0, the first environment where alpha is adapted, the rate of supply M of the de novo B mutants is just the mutation rate per capita, call it mu, times the total size of the A population. Total size which is supposed to be at some stochastic equilibrium, a balance between birth and death. And so now the B mutants, which are unfit in the first environment, they have a birth rate B and a death rate D, aggregating natural deaths and competition. And here, because they're unfit, as a result of the ingredients that we put in the model and that I don't detail here, the birth rate is smaller than the death rate. And because of that, each new B population that enters the environment is doomed to extinction. It's called a subcritical process. So simulation goes like that. In blue, you have the A genotype. that fluctuates around its equilibrium. And in red, orange or red, you have the timid appearance of B mutations. And these B populations that started from a single mutant, they all do some excursion and then go back to extinction, okay, until a new mutant arises. And so you have this mutation selection equilibrium that is also here, but without colors. So here on the left panel, you can see on the top the A population, mind the scale, and in the bottom the B population. Okay, so there are known formula that you can actually derive, which is that if you call NB star the random size of the B population at any given time, the probability that NB star is equal to N is given by this formula, okay, where rho and L are given in terms of the ingredients of the model. And you see the perfect fit to this formula on the right panel. Okay, that's not very important for our purpose, but still there is a probability, a non-zero probability, that when the new environment starts, the number of B mutants present in the population is zero. Okay? If the B mutants were already present in the population, we would call that adaptation from standing variation, and then the B mutants would probably take over and adapt, and let the population adapt. So now in the environment one, it's the phenotype beta that is fitter, and we want to wait, we want to see how much time we wait until we see a B mutant arise and save the population from extinction. So here's what happens when there's no plasticity. Okay, in white you see the environment E0, the blue environment, and in gray the orange environment, the environment E1. Okay, so the A population fluctuates, and then suddenly the environment shifts from 0 to 1, and the A population goes extinct. Okay. When P is slightly larger, when the plasticity is slightly larger, you see that the A population survives a little bit, but still goes to extinction. And you see in cyan, the other blue color, the presence of plastic individuals, which come at frequency P equals 0.3. Okay? So the frequency of plastic individuals that allow the population to survive a little bit, but still not enough for B mutation to arise. Okay, the B are at zero here. And when you increase again P, you see that the frequency of plastic individuals increases in the population. The cyan here fluctuations are much higher. And actually they sustain the population up to a level where the population does not go extinct. And so it's only a question of time when the mutation will arise. And here I want to take your attention to the fact that you see these little excursions in red. You see little excursions of the B mutations that arise, but still they don't grow to large enough numbers so that they take over. So there is what is called stochastic extinction. They are in small numbers, and so these small populations go extinct. And you see that you need a few attempts before a successful B mutation arises. Okay. So let's try to analyze this. So we define the rescue time as the first time a B mutant arises, but also will escape stochastic extinction. And what we want to do is really quantify the force of the Baldwin effect in terms of this time of rescue. Okay. So as I said previously, adaptation from standing variation here will be discarded. Okay, we don't study this fact. The probability that, of course, T rescue can be zero. There's rescue right at the beginning when the environment shifts. If there are already mutants in the population, we discard this case. Okay, and now in environment E1, if we call R the growth rate of the population, just B minus D, just the birth rate minus the death rate, where the death rate here, as I said, aggregates competition and natural death. Now the roles are switched. The alpha phenotype is unfit, has a negative growth rate, and the beta phenotype is fit, has a positive growth rate. Okay? And so the average growth rate of the A genotypes, of the population that carries the A genotype, is the average between the plastic, the non-plastic individuals, 1 minus P, and the plastic individuals, P. Okay. If you compute this average, you will see that because of what we assumed on the growth rate, the average growth rate for p equals zero is negative, and the average growth rate for p equals one is positive. Can you see that? So there must be a threshold, a critical value of plasticity p star, which formula is given here, for which the average growth rate vanishes, okay, is zero. So we can now analyze the simulation this way. So when p is much smaller than p star, the average growth rate is negative, and so the population of A goes extinct. When p is smaller than p star, but still close to p star, the average growth rate is negative, but still the population can survive until extinction, but the extinction can be delayed by the presence of plastic individuals. And when p is larger than p star, the average growth rate is positive, so that the probability of rescue is one. Okay? It's called plasticity sustained survival, and now what we will do is just compute the expectation of this time of rescue. And we see that a second threshold of critical plasticity pops up. So here we define now the rate of adaptation, which is the probability per time unit of arrival of a successful mutant. And so the expectation of the time of rescue is 1 over this quantity, okay? 1 over the rate, okay, it makes sense. So now lambda, you can actually compute it. This rate of adaptation is the mutation rate times the size of the A population at equilibrium times the fixation probability of a B mutant, okay? Each time a B mutant arises, it has a certain fixation, certain probability of outcompeting the A genotype. And so increasing P has two antagonistic effects. The first is that when you increase P, you increase the supply of adaptive mutants, mu A times NA star, okay? It's the total rate of arrival of mutations, of mutants, okay? So when you increase P, you increase the population size because of the fit role of plastic individuals. But you also decrease their probability of fixation. That's the Meyer effect, okay? Because when you increase P, you decrease the fitness advantage of the genotype B, and so you decrease the probability that this B mutant will take over. Okay, that's a very important antagonistic effect between population size, increasing population size, and decreasing the fitness advantage, and so decreasing UB, decreasing the fitness, the fixation probability. Okay. If you look at what happens for p equals p star or for p equals 1, you'll see that the rate of adaptation is 0 for p equals p star because the equilibrium population of the A population is 0. It goes to extinction. And at 1, it's equal to 0 because the B mutants have no fitness advantage. And indeed, if we plot and if we compute the rate of adaptation as a function of plasticity, we can see this second threshold value of p double star, which is here about 0.7, where the rate of adaptation is optimal. Okay, the rate of adaptation peaks for some value p equals p double star. So if we want to wrap up, we can summarize these results into the parameter space with two dimensions. First dimension, the x-axis is plasticity, and the y-axis is the adaptive mutation rate. Of course, so you have two regions that are quite obvious. The first region is the top region. As you increase the mutation rate, you increase the advantage or the likelihood that the mutation, the adaptation will win the race. Okay? So you will rescue the population either by standing variation or by new mutations. The other obvious region is the gray one. The gray one is when the mutation rate is small and plasticity is small, the population goes to extinction, and there's no time for plasticity, for a mutant to take over. The three other regions go as follows. So the first region, the green region, is when the plasticity is small enough that the population is doomed to extinction, but still extinction can be delayed and plasticity can help the new mutant to arise. The blue region is what we call the weak original Baudouin effect. The green is the strong Baudouin effect because without plasticity, the population actually goes extinct very rapidly. The weak Baldwin effect is because plasticity is so large between P star and P double star that the population actually survives, and the rescue mutant will have to arise at some point. But still, increasing P increases the rate of adaptation by increasing population size. And the red region is when the Meyer effect takes over. That is, increasing P reduces the fitness advantage of the adaptive mutants, thereby decreasing the rate of adaptation. All these results are published in this very recently published paper. And so what have we learned from this picture? That the Meyer effect should be very unlikely in reality, because it requires the plasticity to be very close to, like, yielding a phenotype that is already adapted to the new environment. That the strong Baldwin effect, even if it concerns a very narrow zone in parameter space, should be quite likely conditional on survival. Because if you see populations that have survived a new hostile environment, it's very likely that if this environment is very hostile and that the populations have survived, plasticity have played a role in letting them survive until the mutant arises. Now, is weak Baldwin effect likely in nature? That's a question. There are empirical cases, but still lacking data on parallel extinctions or local extirpations proving that plasticity really plays a role in the fixation, in the fate of these populations, ending with fixing the new adaptive mutant. So our perspectives are to relax modeling assumptions. If you have questions on the fact that the model is too simple, there are various ways in which we can easily extend it. If we allow for environmental fluctuations to, like, be quicker, so environment E0 to come back and E1 and E0, we will select for new plasticity, and we can also study the evolutionary origin of plasticity that we did not question here. There are other features of organic selection, like selection gradient, selection threshold, that we could include. Also, a topic on which we are currently working is the genomic basis of the trait mean and variance. If there are alleles that are responsible for, like, shifting the mean, and others for shifting the variance. But there is missing empirical knowledge on the genetic basis of plasticity in general, and whether there is an overlap between the plastic and the genetic pathways. With that, I would like to thank all the members of my group, especially Guillaume Achaz, my co-head and co-author, and thank you for your attention.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.